So, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the May 2nd, 2012 meeting of Metro Riders Advisory Council. It is now 6:34, and I, as chair, am calling the meeting to order. So, let's move on to our first agenda item, which is our second agenda item, public comment period. Do we have anyone who wants to make a statement?
We have two people. The first up is Kurt Rashke.
Okay, please join the table, say your name and any other information you want to know.
Hi, my name is Kurt Rashke. Outgoing rec member David Albert says the bodies on the rack don't generally have much impact, not just here in DC, but at transit authorities across the country. And I think in the case of the rack, that's become something of a self-fulfilling prophecy. A couple of months ago, a rack member said that the rack tries to, and I'm paraphrasing slightly, but said that the rack tries to avoid taking controversial positions on issues of affairs. And it's no wonder the rack wouldn't have much of an impact in that case. I never had a chance. You have to take controversial positions on things if you're going to have an impact. And you might wonder why the rack needs to have an impact. And it's very simple. In the 1970s, the New York City subway was caught up in this vicious cycle of fare increases and declining ridership and deteriorating infrastructure. The system was literally rusting away. And that is what we face here in D.C. Fares are going up. The service is getting worse. People are leaving the system. It's already started to happen with metro access. And with the fare increases that we're about to see on the fixed route system, it's inevitable. People will stop riding, they will go back to their cars, and very simply, we believe in this vicious cycle of decline. And the only way to arrest that is to bring about real, substantial change. And that requires that the RAC find its voice. That requires that the RAC stand up to the board. That requires that the RAC simply stand up in public and speak for itself. And if we don't do that, the system will decline. It's a death spiral. It gets worse and worse and worse. And I'm sure some of you know what New York City looked like in the 1970s, what the subway looked like in the 1970s. We don't want that. Thank you.
Thank you. The next individual for public comment
is Chris Barnes.
I have prepared notes. That's all right. My name is Chris Barnes. I'm also known as Fixalotta on Twitter. Thank you for allowing me a few moments of your time tonight. I want to speak with you about my experience as a public witness to your April 2012 meeting. This was my first time attending a RAC meeting, and I have to say what I saw concerned me. Aside from myself, there were five other members of the public attending your meeting. At least three of the six of us were first-time attendees. While I appreciate the public comment period at the beginning of your meetings, I was surprised to see the lack of interaction with those present for the remainder of your meeting. For example, during the Accessibility Advisory Committee meetings, the public is invited to introduce themselves in a roll call of sorts before the meeting begins and is allowed to make comment during the meetings in various appropriate ways. This interaction often brings about important and meaningful discussion. If the council would consider exploring other models of interaction and used by similar Vermont or Rider committees, you may find similar positive results. Also, I was particularly struck by your open mic agenda item, where you expressed a concern of how to get more of the public to attend your meetings. Everyone at this table brainstormed ways you may reach out to the public to increase attendance, but every one of you missed the opportunity to reach out to the three new faces that were here in the same room with you and ask them a simple question. How did you hear about this meeting? We sat in silence as you ignored us. We were not recognized before, during, or after the meeting in any way, shape, or form by this council. We stood after the meeting waiting for any one of you to come over and introduce yourselves to us or engage us in conversation. Not one of you did. In the months since your last meeting, I've seen zero effort by this council to try to attract the public to this meeting. If you truly do want the public to attend these meetings, and I honestly want you to claim as a representative of Vermont's ridership, you need to work on how you reach out and include those of us who do attend your meeting. We are here tonight as willing allies to help you accomplish this and other goals, but the first step needs to be change on the part of this council. Thank you for your time.
Thanks for the comments, and I think now would be just a good time for me to respond, not necessarily to Chris Barnes' comments, but just the public in general. One quick statement, the RAC meets once a month. This is sort of our executive session. This is the 2 hours that we have for our official business. It's not that we don't want to hear from the public. That's why we have the public comment period. It's just that we have a lot of interactions and discussions over email and at our working group meeting. where we strongly encourage the public to come. Starting our tenure at the Rock Leadership Team, we actually have noticed that public attendance is an issue, but like many community groups, we're trying to figure out how to improve that. And so we've actually just started a flyer mechanism where we'll actually send that flyer out to a number of different community groups throughout the jurisdiction and the region. And I know I personally sent that out to my network a week ago, and I'm sure some of the other RAC members can attest to having done something similar. So we recognize what you're saying, we hear what you're saying. We're doing the best that we can to address it. It may not be everyone's needs, it's not everyone's needs, but it volunteers and appointees, we're doing what we can with the resources that we have. Any other comments, Mr. Russ? Any other comments?
Can I say one?
Sure.
One thing, and this is not, this is something that we started that maybe the RAC might consider. One of the things that we wanted to try to do in to get the audience involved was to, they would submit written comments. And then as the discussion goes forward, if we could address those comments would be submitted to the chair, and then would be addressed by the RAC. So that was just another way that we could engage the membership at ABC if there was given time on a given topic. It seemed to work very well. It allowed the question to be focused to the top, to the two point that could be addressed by the chair or the speaker without, let's say, people monopolizing the conversation. So it's something we've tried over the last 6 months. It's been effective. I think it's helped. At least I hope it helps.
Yeah, that's a good question. Any other comments before we move on to approval of the agenda? Hearing none, I'm going to move on to the approval of the agenda, and I actually want to take a moment right now to read a statement. The RAC leadership team apologizes to members of the RAC and the public for the last minute change to tonight's meeting agenda. The RAC had confirmed a presentation by the Office of the Inspector General to discuss the purchase card agreement report findings mentioned in the Washington Post and other media outlets in March. The RAC tries its best to be a forward-looking, solutions-oriented body. It was the RAC leadership team's vision that the OIG presentation focused on how the model plans to better protect customer and jurisdictional funds from waste, fraud, and abuse. The RAC believes that it is within its jurisdiction to ask WMATA to present to riders what steps they are taking to ensure these abuses don't happen again. The RAC received a request from the WMATA board roughly 24 hours ago that the OIG presentation not occur at tonight's meeting. While we are sympathetic to concerns about a public presentation if the investigation is still underway, we also believe that 24-hour notice canceling an agenda item is not professional or appropriate. We thank you, fellow RAC members, for your patience and understanding regarding this sudden change. So now that we have the revised agenda ahead of us, can we take a motion to
approve the agenda?
So, all in favor? Okay, so now we're going to move on to the approval of the past meeting minutes. Let's begin with March 2012. Are there any comments?
Actually, you all don't have March in your packet, so you just have April.
Okay.
Well, my apologies.
Discuss April. Any comments on the April meeting minutes?
So,
all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions?
I abstained.
So we just had one abstain.
Got it. Thank you.
Great. We're almost right on time. Now we have our bus stop enhancement agenda item, and so I want to invite both Mr. Jim Hambury and Mr. Chris. Please come forward. We look forward to your presentation. As they come forward, I want to remind RAC members that, again, because we are trying our best to be solution-oriented and forward-looking, so remember as you listen to the presentation and as you view it, to think about all of the constructive feedback and let's kind of not necessarily highlight what we think isn't so great, but then also highlight for my staff what we think is perfect and what we really do as well. And also remember that this is an item that we were actually directed by the board to work on. So as you're listening to the presentation, think about maybe what deliverables we can work with for my staff to then go back and report to the board. So I'll turn the floor over to you.
Let me just do a quick introduction. Jim Hammerman, Director of the Office of Bus Planning. Chris Ochia is our manager in charge of our bus customer facilities group, which means he and his staff are the ones that determine where bus stops will be, support the installation of the poles and signs, all of the information panels, all of the shelter maps. They also generate the regional maps and coordinate and lead the development of new bus projects. Like Tacoma Langley Park Transit Center and bus input to Silver Spring and other major capital projects. As such, the topic has been near and dear to Mr. Ochia's heart. We've been working for several years on improving the support facilities for bus stops, and that's exactly why we created his branch within my office, to really raise the profile of bus stops as they represent really the point of sale, the entry to our metro bus system. That's where the community interfaces with the vehicle, both getting on and off, and the whole experience begins there. So with that as a context, let me let Mr. Ochia do his presentation, and we'll be happy to address questions and comments later on.
Thank you, Mr. Hunter. My name is Chris Ochia, and I'm invited here to speak to you as a follow-up of the February 3rd meeting. And I believe that meeting touched on the grant on grants. So the questions I was asked to prepare to answer are who's responsible for stop construction, who's responsible for stop maintenance, what are the challenges facing the metro, and the criteria we use for selecting stop improvement. And I believe this would be in reference to the grant money that we have now to improve bus stop vendor accessibility. And what I really would like to do at the end is to increase the understanding about the things we do, which Jim has just summarized. And as being said, we are relatively new, and the report division was created in 2009, and I'm one of the branches within the division. Nine branches, customer facilities. There's also another branch that deals with bus service planning. So we do have, and then the other side is performance analysis. Then we collect data on ridership, on fares, full rides by the system, and where and how. And the last section is the customer facilities branch. And just like Jim said before, our role is really to raise the profile of the bus stops and bus stop customers in terms of the entire metro infrastructure with the buses. And what I'm going to do is talk about our role, what we do in bus planning. One of the things we do is, the bus planner is there, we help me to, address the issues or explain what we do, okay? So one of the things we do is the bus stop and shelter program. The bus stop and shelter program helps us provide bus stop information. And what we're trying to do is to make information simple and effective. So when you go to the bus stop now, you see a simple spider map. It kind of draws a line along and tells you you're here and you're going there. Because what we're trying to do is to make your experience before you get on the bus, and after you get on the bus, the most wonderful experience for you. In other words, you have all the information you need, and the environment is attractive and safe for you before you get on the bus. And after you get on the bus, so you have information in case you don't know where you're going, all the information you need, how to go and take your bus, and which bus to take. So along those lines, there are things that happen that make it possible for us to provide that kind of service before on the bus and after you get out of the bus. So like I said, the bus stop information thing is we're trying to make you maybe you see one of them on this day. Bus stop and a very simple spider-like mask. Plus the long line, doesn't go here and doesn't move around, just very simple. Yeah, and we are also making the prints larger fonts so people can read them, because people have told us that these are not legible at all or very well. And you also notice that part of the making it comfortable for you is we have a new bus plan system. Yeah, and the new bus plan has rail on it, so people can also use that to find out where they're going and also help us with ground routes and services. And the other thing we do is that when you have construction going on, we also send out notices so that you don't go to the bus stop and suddenly the bus stop is not working. So we need to find out, coordinate with whoever is doing the job, to post notices on time, let you know that they're shut down, and tell you, give you the alternative route that you're going to use. One of the complaints we've had in the past is that there are too many bus stops, and so people stop at every block. And so one big program that we have now going on is the bus stop consolidation program. We're trying to consolidate bus stops. We don't do this unilaterally. We work with politicians, we work with stakeholders, we work with our bus riders. So together we decide that the bus stop should be here and not there. And that way it makes the bus trip faster, it's more efficient, it saves us time and saves you money also. We also have the MAP program. Again, this is along the line of making your bus experience comfortable. We have maps at the rail station, the neighborhood maps that tells you you are here and you're going somewhere else. Again, the maps take off from this simplified method of drawing lines. For example, people have said that the current maps of town are too dense. You can't read, you can't differentiate the lines, you don't know where Virginia starts, you don't know where the district starts. So we're going to separate the three, we're going to make them simpler to understand by breaking up the Maryland area into two, make them simpler, again, along the lines of the Spider-Man system. So it'll be easier for you to read and understand and know where you're going. We don't necessarily have to indicate, we're going to show the ridership system with lines to indicate the volume on those lines. So you know which ones have higher frequency and those ones that carry more passengers. And the other thing we also do is when there's a roadblock, as I said before, the roadblock involves tearing down the roadway, relocating the bus stop, we need to let people know ahead of time so that they don't show up and the bus stop is not there. Recently, we completed a bus stop inventory system. And what we did here is that before now, it was difficult for us to let you know where the bus stop, we don't even know where some of the bus stops are. And it might sound interesting, but now we have the bus stop inventory system of the 11,500 bus stops in the system. We know where these bus stops are, what amenities are available there, and where they're located. And that's part of an asset that will help us manage the system more effectively, because we can tell you the characteristic of each bus stop and what's going on here. And when any changes are made, then we'll go back and make the changes in the system so we can have the information on today. Okay, so that's the kind of things we do in terms of making your ride comfortable before you get on the bus and after you get on the bus. And I think you should actually go back 2 slides back. There you go. Okay. And so all this stuff I talked about that we do, right here I hear members of my staff that are responsible for each activity. So if somebody has bus stop complaints, so the glass is broken, the pole is gone, the flag is missing, I can't call the bus to find out what next bus is going to come, Mr. Balansky is the person to get in touch with. The maps I was describing about neighborhood maps or the timetable maps or anything that has to do with maps, Omar Johnson. For project construction, I talked about detours and construction going on that allows us to let you know ahead of time before construction, grounding. And then planning studies, some of have an individual who's also in charge of plans for it. And then the maintenance, at bus stops, sometimes you see potholes or tree limbs. In other words, the gospel do not own assets outside of our transit center. These assets are owned by other institutions. So if we have a pothole at the bus stop, then you call us, make the complaint, we know who to call and ask them to help us fix the pothole or tree limbs. Okay, so this is the term that helped me coordinate all the jobs and provide, like I said before, that comfortable life before and after. Next. So this is actually a summary of the program. So we have a silent shelter crew, and these individuals, they're responsible. I talked about complaints. When you get those complaints, these individuals are the ones that can happen at transit stations. They help us either install the poles, fix the shelter, do the signs, and then there's the information on case and map program, like I talked before. And there's a project of working on the field, so we coordinate, we work with all jurisdictions and people who are doing work, make sure that the project they are doing, if they affect the bus stop, that we are involved Now, if you look at this list here, you're going to see the word coordination three times. And the reason is because most of the stuff we do is coordination. We coordinate with lots of individuals, agencies. Next. Okay, so we have like coordination involves 12 local and state agencies in addition to adjacent property owners. So that's a lot of people to talk to so that in the end you don't get the cross set because you want to have a bus stop. But at the same time, you want to work with people to let them know that we just don't go this alone, that we coordinate with them, jurisdictions, they want to be involved, the stakeholders in the community, like this group here. That we are talking to people, reaching out to the community because this is a cooperative effort. The business there, if you look at the chart here, we have a lot of 11,490 shelters, and they are located in the district and you see the distribution over there. And if you look at that, you see that a lot of these farms are outside of metro owned facilities, this is transit centers. Therefore, we need to work with individuals who own these sidewalks for this bus stop spot. We need to work with the individuals whose properties are adjacent to this bus stop. And so we really need to work with everybody involved to get our work done. And so far, I think we're getting on a lot better. Anyway, at the southeast corner, there you see a Spider-Man about referring to how it looks like. Next. And so one of the things I was asked to talk about is challenges facing us as we try to get this work done. Of course, the first one is resource. The resource is never there, it's always. Resource is there, but most of the time it's not sufficient for what you need to do, which is part of why we've gotten the 1.2 million grants to improve our cost of making them accessible. So resources in terms of money, resources in terms of staffing, resources in terms of getting people who you want to talk to, because other agencies have their own problems. The other challenge is the size of the service area. We're talking about 3 states, 11,500 stops. I mean, that's a lot of bus stops. That's a lot of eyeballs that you have to talk to get stuff done. And so the number of us involved, that's tremendous. So you get comments, you try to prioritize them and respond to them as much as you can. And sometimes people think you're not responsive. You are, but because this first item, the other resource, is something like handicap. So you try to do the best you can to really prioritize it. So that when we get complaints and it's involved with safety, we need to go out and do it tomorrow. Involve safety, we have to go out and do it tomorrow. Okay? If you're letting the boss and right behind, things associated with safety. And then, again, the word coordination comes up one more time. Legacy. Now, in the district, there are many reasons why you have bus stops in almost in every block. You go outside to Virginia or in Maryland, there are different, the bus stop system has a different pattern. And so these legacies are affected people believe they own a bus stop. And that question makes it difficult for you to take it away, which is why you have to talk to people. Okay? So don't take away my bus stop. They take away this guy's bus stop so I can go past it. It's kind of interesting. Okay? In that way, you will realize that in different areas, you have to work differently to get the work done. And the other thing is that the newness of the program, you know, before June, worked with the system to create this department, there was no one department that was responsible for what we're describing here. And so we're so new, so we're trying to make sure everybody knows what this is, and we're trying to get them to cooperate and collaborate with us to get work done. So over time, people will know we're here, people will know how important it is to get a bus stop in a state that will accept accessible to people who, you know, who are disabled, and then to be accessible with everybody else who also wants to use the bus stop. It's safe, it's clean, it's tidy, it works. Next. And so, given that we've gotten the money this year to make improvements and make bus stop accessible, the question I was asked to answer is, so what criteria do we use to improve these bus stops? And so, last week we had a meeting and a number of stakeholders were there and we were going through this criteria. How do we, out of these 11,500 bus stops that are not accessible, how do we define which one to work on the bus and which one to move up next? And how do we rank them? And so, these are the criteria we use. If somebody who uses metro access identifies a bus stop as being inaccessible, it has a high ranking. Because the reason is, you want to make this bus stop accessible, which is what they just told you, who is making it accessible. So that really tops the list. And when that comes to me, most people believe that that would be a very important criterion to use in ranking bus stops. Another thing is whether the bus near a metro access destination or origin. Because if it's very near, then it means that it will attract a lot of people using that bus stop. Part of the grant money required that we focus on areas with low-income persons or people with a concentration of poverty, which means these individuals do not have very good access to private automobiles. So they don't take a bus. And so that's one of the criteria to look at. So there's information about where the majority of these people live. So if it coincides with someone requesting a bus stop that is inaccessible, then that bumps off the ranking for that particular bus stop. And of course, people with disabilities residing in Myanmar. We have information on where these people live, and so we can also, that's something we have to look at also if we're trying to identify a bus stop to improve. And then the bus stop is on a priority corridor. These are about 2 dozen high ridership routes in the system that most riders use. And if it's there, it means if you improve it, then more people are actually going to ride also. And then the ridership at the stop. What is going on now? How many people, because we do know people, how many people who get on and off at bus stop? I told you about Sam that does that. Data performance analysis. So we know ridership at each stop. So that gives us information to help us know that this is some location to focus on or not. Okay, and then of course, we need to get a permit to get this work done. That also is a criterion because if the jurisdiction is not willing or prepared to work with us, it becomes a problem. So these are the kind of criteria we'll look at, and with the group is going to continue looking at to select the routes that Mr. Postal that they will improve as we continue work. And that is where we're at. Questions?
Wonderful. Thank you so much for that presentation. I think one of the from living in the city, I've come across a number of bus stops that I didn't think were fully accessible, and I think some of it isn't even to say that it can completely be fixed by a lot of or district government. Some of it is on federal land, and so I didn't hear you mention that up at the National Park Service, so I didn't talk about that. that's another concern that we have to take into consideration. So I'm going to open up the floor for comments. We do have a new member. Welcome. Once we finish this agenda item, we'll give you a chance to introduce yourself, talk about how you use the metro system, all of that. And I'm going to open up the floor right now. Remember to give us constructive feedback, which a lot of which I don't like, what you think the RAC can work with from our staff on to have some back to the board. And I'm just going to go around to everybody before this,
Jim, I want to thank you for coming again, and I also want to thank you for coming as well. I have a number of questions. I'm going to ask them all. I do want to ask a couple, but I want to start by saying what struck me was when you were talking about the comments that you can get on the complaints that you get and how people feel that Metro may not be responding to them or being responsive enough. And I get that, the huge system and we probably get a lot of them. I would suggest, though, that when people create some type of mechanism, and when people make their initial complaint or suggestion, that somebody responds to them to know that they got it, and then also explain to them what process you're going to take in order to follow up on it. Because if they never hear anything back from you, then they're kind of right in assuming that you never, that you're not taking their complaint. And so if you know about this individual metro, about this individual bus stop, and you know that you have to consult not only with the metro system, but the county government, and maybe the municipal government, and somebody else, then explaining that to them will help them understand that this is not just Jim saying no, or Jim not doing it. That might help them. But I did want to ask, I'm only going to ask one of the other questions, nine that are available here, is about the stakeholder conversation that you had, that you said you had last week, and that you talked about earlier. Were they riders on the stakeholder group?
Yes.
They were. Where? How did you get them, I guess?
Oh, we got them from talking to the AAC, mm-hmm. Okay, by talking to the jurisdictions.
Let me say this, I want to make sure when I give all my colleagues enough time to speak. Sometimes I think when county members, but when governments use this all together, when they say stakeholders, we'll say, well, we'll just get some people from the county, and we'll get some people from this particular area. Those, a lot of times, are not stakeholders. They live over there, they know the people, but they don't use that bus out. And that makes them not a stakeholder. That makes them someone who's just there. And so, Patrick just told me that you did communicate with his group.
You were not communicating with, right?
So I know we would love to be involved in this. I'm pretty sure that there are other rider advocates that would love to be involved in this. And I say that to say this, and then I'll be done. There's the old thing that my grandmother always said, that if you don't have a seat at the table, you might be on the menu. And so, since we don't have a seat at the table, I don't know, we might do it later on. What you come up with, if we don't like it, we might just be responding negatively and not positively, as opposed to how positively we might respond if we aren't truly happy.
I want to say that's not just bus planning. It goes through the training, it goes through the budget, it goes for everything. And that's something that the RAC and the board and staff have to work on to make sure that we are more aware of what these community needs are going on so that we can attend and participate, as well as maybe put you in touch with other folks that do actually ride that bus day in or day out.
Can I jump in here?
Just
to let you know, that was one of the reasons that I scheduled Mr. Ochoa to come tonight. This meeting that he spoke about last week was in the middle of the day, which I understand would probably be difficult for many of you to attend. And also, because the grant that's being described is focused on access for individuals with disabilities, that's a requirement of the federal grant that Metro got. They did reach out to riders, Metro Access users, and members of the disability community and the AAC's bus and rail subcommittee. So
specific project, not a global bus stop management advisory group. We can respond about that more, but I accept your point. And we'll be reporting back to you about the outcome recommendations, so we'll make sure that you've got an opportunity to weigh in with for those 30 or so stops to move on to being approved.
And this is Pat, and of course, I know that I was supposed to be at that meeting, and I wasn't at that meeting. I know you had 50 people there, roughly. I think they composed my five or six members of my committee. You had a lot of travel trainers, you had a lot of people from the SILs, you had a lot of disability advocates. So that's important. And I also know the nature of the grant, so that you're looking at disability issues, and I know your top two recommendations were mental access. I think it would be important in talking to, or reporting back to the RAC, that the RAC understand that there were seven criteria that you measured against, and that you, you know, they spent about 3.5 hours or so voting the recommendations against one another, and that is how you came up with the top two mental access recommendations and the other five ranked by the group. So I think it would be good for the RAC to hear what were the criteria that you were looking at, how they came out as far as the scores were concerned, and why you voted, you know, let's say, the top two mental access recommendations as the key, because it's important. I know that there's going to be a follow-up meeting in June. I also know the scope of the grant. We dealt with disability issues, but I think it's important for a grant who also has mental access as part of their charter to be sitting there to understand what's going on. What's critical about the bus stop agenda and moving forward is that I know AAC over the last 3 or 4 years has been doing a lot to track it, report it, ask for reports. It's important that the RAC has exactly the same information that we do. This is not a proprietary set of recommendations that belong just to AAC. They belong to the RAC, so that we can both move forward and make sure that they get prioritized with all the other RAC issues that they have. I think that we're looking at, out of the $1.2 million, 50 bus stops, and how we're going to prioritize those. And I also know that they're looking at a follow-up grant of, I don't remember, was it $14 million or $1.4 million, I forget.
Whatever people want to give us, all the same.
Yeah, whatever, 1.4, 14, whatever. It's just a decimal point. You know, as far as the bus stop priorities down the pipe. But in going before the board and being able to report jointly that this is the direction that we're moving in the first phase, and then we want to move towards X, Y, Z decisions as far as, you know, not just disability bus stops, access to mental access, but in general, the whole scope of the issue. I think that's important, and so there's a certain amount of transparency, I think, that has to be taken into consideration here. And these bus stops are critical to my group, my constituency. But I, as a member of the RAC, I want them on my side. And I don't want to create, and I don't think we are, but I don't want to create an us and them situation. I want the RAC on my side so that when we go to the board, we say, hey, this is critical phase one. Let's go and look at everything down the line so we're all marching down the same path together. In order to do that, when you have your June meeting, I'd love to see that opened up to the RAC so the RAC is informed and they can see the process and not just get the results of the study.
We'll be happy to notify John and he can let everybody know what the meeting is.
Right.
Again, this is a focused project.
Oh, I understand that. But
kind of moving forward with the stakeholder interests.
I understand. But I also think that this is a, you know, the RAC also has, in their charter, they have mental access in their charter. They've been good enough over the years to let the AAC take the lead on that. But if we're looking strictly at what they do, mental access is still part of what they do. And so I don't want to cut them out. I want them to be, you know, sitting along beside me and agreeing with what we do. It's hard enough to get stuff done.
We'd like to present a lot more Metro Bus stuff here.
Yeah.
Because we think absolutely.
Absolutely.
Critical to the board and their consideration and decisions. So we'd be happy to follow up on your own.
Excellent.
That we read about, we're on the same page, just being able to move forward together. I've got four more comments, I think, so let's go to Ben.
First of all, thanks very much for what you do. I'm primarily a bus user, so I drink the fruits of your labor every day. Three quick points. One, I think the problem is not so much what you guys are doing in terms of the shelters and the flags and all that. I think the system works very well. I see some market improvements there. I think the problem comes with non-LaMotta barriers that are put there, either with or without your approval. And I'm talking most specifically about garbage cans, tree boxes, and those little things where you take the free newspapers. I think those are your main. Yes, the main three problems, and I don't know if there's a way that you can establish some sort of standard with a jurisdiction, several jurisdictions, about where those are placed. Because often it's important or, you know, good to have those things in the neighborhood of a bus stop, but where specifically they are next to the bus stop, I found that often creates problems getting on and off the bus in various places.
Absolutely. To address that, if I may, we, a couple of years ago, we created guidelines for the design and placement of bus stops, which do have specific layout requirements and recommendations for where litter boxes should be placed relative to a shelter, relative to a trash can and the bus stop pole. There's a whole functional relationship that all of it needs to have to be optimal. But a lot of it goes back to that issue of the heritage and the legacy. There's a lot of 150 years of bad design out there on the street, and we're working slowly to try and get it corrected. There isn't enough resource to go back and correct everything, but as we go forward with grants like we were just talking about, and also as active participants in streetscape development and street reconstruction projects, we're trying to get the bus stop design to recognize that people have to get on and off the bus using two doors, not just one, and that obstructions are both inconvenient and a safety hazard, and reduce the flow of people, which costs ultimately more money because it takes longer to get on and off the bus. So we've been making inroads in that argument. We're very proud of 8th Street Northeast for the finished 3 years of construction. We did have several very good examples of how bus stops can really serve high ridership locations, and so we're hoping to work very closely with the jurisdictions. That's part of Ms. Roche and Ms. Bradley's task.
And yeah, I think, well, as you said, I think we'll see more sort of chipping away over time. So it's good to
know that. The role of raising consciousness, especially back at the jurisdiction level, is very helpful.
Yeah. Two more points real quick. I think one thing you mentioned is that as part of this project, you're gathering information and data about as many of the bus stops as you have and trying to get a better handle on that. I think there are some people sitting right behind you, actually, who would be very interested in getting involved in that process. And I want to encourage you to use crowdsourcing as a potential way of getting a handle on all this data. I mean, it's so huge, but there are a lot of people, a lot of advocates, a lot of sort of technology type people out there. I have to be one of them, but I praise those who are, who would be more than willing to help you out on all of this. And I think, you know, talking about sort of openness of Metro, this is one of the areas where it can really benefit Metro, both in terms of public relations, but also in terms of the bottom line, in terms of what you're getting out of the data that you have. And the last thing, I just have a question about, I've heard some information about next bus status signs on some of the bus stops, and that you're going to be rolling those out. I'm just wondering if you can give us a quick update on this.
On Monday, we were able to issue the RFP, the request for proposals, for a multi-year contract that would, excuse me, install upwards of 800. These are the light-emitting diode, the electronic digital signs that shelters throughout the Metro bus system, starting with our Metro bus stations and working outwards. over the next 4 years. And three significant sources of funding. One is the District of Columbia has given us $250,000 to develop and install signs on the shelters. We will do so with this new contract. Secondly, we have, I think it's 168 or so signs to deploy that are being funded by our Tiger Grant. We'll be doing that. And then third, in the general manager's fiscal 13 budget is a line item included in the bus enhancements program for an initial down payment of $400,000 to hire a coordinator and begin installing signs at Metro bus stations. And so those three initiatives and then working with others, we hope once we have inertia with the program, others will get on board and we will have more signs throughout the week.
Thanks.
And then, going to add that has benefit not only for knowing when the next bus is coming, it also gives us a new way to be able to push information out to the riders. Like, for example, this evening, 15th and K Street had quote unquote police activity, which means the vice president was going home. And so everything was shut down. Well, we have no way out. We now have e-alerts, we can tell folks, but it'd be very beneficial in the future to be able to put a message on the K Street stops, for example, or along Wisconsin Avenue saying, get a cup of coffee, the 32 will be along when he gets there. Things like that.
Okay, thanks. So we have about 2 minutes left for the segment, and I can extend it slightly, but we got five more comments. So,
thank you for those comments. The improvements has in echo and others, I can see them and they just two comments. The first is regarding the spy maps. What I would like to see is what they had in London, which is the underground station. There's actually a top kind of map that's available at the station that shows the spy form where all the buses go. You have that somewhat, you know, the map that shows where the buses go, any station that's large. But I think it's nice to have that representation. It shows where they go, what the approximate travel times are. And in the spider where they connect to another underground station shows that, I think that would be a useful corollary for the metro. And then the other thing on accessibility for me, and it's just a little pet peeve, is that any bus stop, and I know you guys know this, that has parking in front of it, is not accessible for anyone with a wheelchair, and it's probably harder for everyone to board. And so if you look at bus stop consolidation, obviously, restricting parking where people have been accustomed to park is a difficult issue, but perhaps you could kill two birds with one stone by consolidating those belts and at the same time restricting parking so that they're accessible to people with disabilities. That's it.
Yeah, in fact, I sent Chris a picture this morning. I was up on Cactus Drive at the University of Maryland Library Lane bus stop. It has three cars parked there, legally parked there. And the pickup location is at the stop bar for the stop sign. Not a good situation. So we're doing an F-line study. We'll look at that stop and see how campus stops should be relocated. And your home, Calvin, has a few examples where they could do better. So we would encourage you to talk to them as well.
Okay,
well,
we've got
1 minute
and 5 minutes to go.
Good comment. I've seen other signs. I like them. It was a little bit disorienting at first to lose the timetable of how long it takes to get to the endpoint of the route, but the font is very large. Easy to read, and we appreciate that.
Thanks.
Good comment. Thank you for what you do. I have a question. My question is it the goal to have timetables on each bus stop? For example, I live in Sea Pleasant on the B-15, 14, and the A-12 routes. Some stops have timetables, some don't. Is that a goal to have timetables on each bus stop?
Okay.
Our intent and the guideline is that we would have a timetable with all the stops with 25 or more riders. And that does not include all stops in the system. Right now, we're in the process of putting up 5,000 new display cases. And that'll go, so the initial target is 5,000 out of the 11 and change, so almost half. So we'll have the new form info cases.
Thank you. Jim, I want to tell you, I heard for the first time on any of us announcement of meeting from the rear door. Thank you very much for that. My first hearing of the call wasn't his first occurrence. So, Chris, for you, I think maps are just really crucial for the people I know in the Civic Association world. Price, timetable, or keeping to the schedule and wanting to know where they are at all times. In Montgomery County, for instance, Ridon used to produce and make quite available a map of its routes. I think for budget reasons it's not doing that nearly so much. It does have an electronic version of it available. You say that the Maryland map is going to be broken into two. Should I just get in contact with the person on the contact list, Mr. or Ms. Johnson, about more detail about that?
Yes, that would be the best thing to do, so that we will respond specifically to your meeting. You're talking about, well, we're talking about, I think the best thing to do is talk to Mr. Johnson. Otherwise, you can call me and talk some more.
But our regional map includes all of the local bus routes. So like Ridon, they don't need to do a map, they just hand out ours. What we're thinking of doing and what I've asked the staff to do is basically split Maryland somewhere along the 95 or US 140. So then you can have Montgomery and for the Northeast Prince George's at a scale that you can actually read. I'm becoming more sensitive to those issues as I get older, and then we can, where there's busy areas like Bethesda or Silver Spring, we can call out boxes and things like that.
Last question. Ridon, I know, provides after some hour in the evening the option for riders to request a stop. What is Metrobus's policy?
Versus to stop only at the stop.
Thank you.
Purposes for consistency among operators, and we recognize the flexibility that a local operator has, but if driver turnover changes and just the management challenges, we can get them to stop at the stop they're supposed to stop at. That's a measure of success.
Okay, I'll try to be brief, but regarding the legacy issue, the buses in every block, having been the victim of one of my bus stops being eliminated, when it was explained to me that there was, you know, it's unreasonable, and we were told that it has to have at least X number of riders, and those are determined by the partner. Fares or whatever, you know, the records. So, I guess that in addition to that, that's also how they determine the shelters, where the shelters go if it has over 40 passengers or something like that, or something to that effect. At least that's the way that the bus company works in Ireland, and I don't know if that's.
The original construct was. If you had 50 or more passengers at a stop, then we would, as a region, advocate having a shelter there. In the district, it's more about making money through advertising than necessarily complying with that standard. They meet that standard, but they may have shelters at other locations that don't necessarily meet that threshold, but there's no negative to having more shelters than needed.
Okay, so it doesn't matter whether you have to stop every block. just because of this extra money, is that if this one we're talking to?
Well, yeah, we were talking about the shelter place. Bus stops, there's a different issue than no shelters. But for the district, they're gaining something like $99 of profit over a 20-year franchise, and it's paying for the reconstruction of many streets, so optimizing revenue is important to the district. But our goal is to have shelters only where there's an actual bus stop, so there is a correlation there. But you'll be pleased to know this, the Eckington community was so warm and friendly when Chris went to meet with them about the bus stops last year, that he's completely redrawn the entire plan for public outreach when it comes to our bus stop consolidation program. And in fact, Mark Browning is just initiating that process for 5 or 7 other corridors. And there's a great deal more public outreach in advance of putting the notice on the sign that says this is going away in 2 weeks. If you have a question, call Chris.
Okay, and then the other issue that I have is I do not like all this stuff that, okay, this is regional, I guess jurisdictional, but that are just, you have just the flag, and it's just on the dirt right next to the highway. That's not safe for anybody. Especially if you have flights between, you know, half an hour between one bus and the other. So I think that it's something that has to be addressed with the jurisdictions. And I guess it's bus consolidation would fall into that. But the fact of the matter is that having a flag right next to the highway, you know, I have to cross through the highway and then just stand there by the curb of the highway, and any car, you know, sort of swerves or whatever, I might be at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Right.
So that is something that should be, you know, eliminated as much as possible.
Well, and that was the purpose behind our presentation to the board in February, to raise the profile so that board members can raise those issues. And Prince George's County, to their credit, has really taken this to heart, and they're seeking grants, and they're coordinating bus stop improvements in a number of places throughout the county. The city is ahead of anybody else. And they're also focusing with some of our tiger money on improving some of the highest ridership stops and trying to get a foothold. So, you know, incremental progress in terms of awareness, and your assistance will be appreciated as we get that message out. But this is an important a public investment. And you're right, it's about safety, it's about access, it's about mobility, and same as sidewalks and streets and traffic lights and all the other infrastructure that goes to support transportation.
I realize we've branched out a little bit to bus stops. Jim, on your presentation, we appreciate your analysis because we've had quite a few questions and all sorts of things. The first thing I'd say is if you guys are serious about collecting suggestions or complaints about bus stops from riders, there needs to be a system of it. And well, I appreciate having emails and phone numbers and things. There needs to be some sort of social media component. When I'm getting on a bus and there's no schedule on it or something like that, and I'm not going to remember David Wadalansky's email.
I wouldn't want you to either. That's just for your information. That's not the public input. Public input is our customer services center, 6377000, Ramada.com, contact us. Those are the folks that receive the information. Chris has created an electronic form for them. They can query you, get the information, send it to them. We have a record. We can follow up. It gets reported up to management of what we're doing. That's where the public should be going.
Is there a forum for commenting or registering complaints on Facebook or Twitter?
If you are a Twitter user, at Ramada, whatever, Brian Anderson and Dan Stessel are very receptive, and they district is on.
What about Facebook?
We do have a Facebook page. The digital media manager addressed that. I personally am not familiar with it.
Is that something we could get an answer on, just following up through on our bus complaints or register on Facebook if they're tracked? Not even necessarily responded to, tracked and addressed. That'd be great. Other question I have is, you guys have an adopt-the-stop sort of system in place, sort of, where businesses have opportunities.
Yes.
How is outreach on that tied to these improvements? Have you guys been partnering recently with participants to make some of these improvements?
Not
taking,
so.
Stretching your dollars farther?
No, because it's sort of counterintuitive. With the district shelters, the contractor, Clear Channel, is contractually obligated to go clean that shelter every day.
Right.
So there's really no point in having an adopted shelter for people to go out and pick up trash and clean it every day.
Sure.
And that's the case in Montgomery. It's not the case in Prince George's, Fairfax, Arlington, and Alexandria have their own crews that go do that work. So the value of the Adopt-A-Stop project is less now than it was 5 years ago, or 6 years ago, when Scotty Ward was created.
Sure. But what about non, where there isn't a, does Clear Channel maintain places where there isn't a shelter?
No.
What about those locations?
In those locations, yeah.
Because I think those are the places where
But those are also the locations that are generally low profile and people don't volunteer for them. But if someone does want to, we're happy to accommodate that. And, where developers have put in new shelters, on Fairfax County especially, oftentimes they'll just take care of that as part of the homeowners association. And so it's, I hate to describe it as a hodgepodge, but it's more of the coordination aspect is what we do among all the various entities that engage.
I would just encourage you as well to utilize kind of those adoptions as much as possible. I think it's in the best interest of businesses located near bus stops to have bus stops that are clean and have empty trash cans and have the right schedules put up. And I think that additional outreach to try to bring some of those people in as necessary to reduce the cost for a lot overall and make a better system.
Just a follow-up, just on that comment really quickly. We have that issue at some of the stops in Ward 7 and Ward 8. What we found is it's not necessarily just a model. It's the business owners, so it's getting DCRA involved, it's getting DPW involved, and so it really is a partnership to figure out who's going to keep this stop. I mean, it doesn't make it right, but a lot of times it's not just
projects in which bus stops are dealt with, and it's goes beyond even what we talked about today. So, but to lay all of that out in the time frame and the funding and craft something that would be meaningful for you to report back to the board, to work together on.
We're open to suggestions, and as you go through these different projects, if you say, oh, that might be for the photograph, please present to one of those. But yeah, that is something you have to really help you with. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it.
So next, I'm going to ask our newest member, Candace Walsh. Thank you so much for introducing yourself. And if you can just speak a little bit about the jurisdiction you represent, how you use the measure system, and maybe what you hope to see or how you hope to contribute to the RAC this year. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Candace Walsh. I currently live on 14th Street. I decided to apply for the RAC basically because Metro is a huge part of my life. On a regular basis, I take the 14th Street bus, and I also take the 16th Street bus, and then depending on what's going on during that day, I will take the Metro, depending on where I have to be. And so since it's such an integral part of my life, I guess I wanted to be able to have some kind of input on what happens. And so, for example, I like the fact that we're talking about bus stops today because I've had my own issues waiting at bus stops and things like that, especially on 14th Street, more so than 16th Street. So I think those issues, especially bus stop issues, are near and dear to my heart because that's mainly what I ride. And so I live on 14th up near Upshur, so I'm sort of a combo of Columbia Heights, 16th Street Heights, and Petworth. So I guess I see a lot of what goes on. Also, my entire family's in the Maryland, Virginia, DC area, so I take the metro out to Virginia and Maryland also. So I think I'm here.
Thank you, Laurel. That's happy to look forward to working with you.
Can I just interject? I want to make sure that you're plugged into our 14th Street study, which is going on right now. And I encourage you to be involved. So feel free to contact me for more information.
Okay, definitely. Thank you. So moving to our next agenda item, which is the leadership team's meeting with General Manager Sorrells. Now, we're a little bit behind schedule. We're about 10 minutes. I thought I'd ask anyone that may have to meet us a little bit earlier. We're still going to try and get out of here by 8:30. So the meeting with the General Manager, the RAC leadership team met with General Manager Sorrells last Friday at, it was 8 or 9 a.m. And 8 a.m. General Manager Sorrells, Barbara Richardson, the head of communications. Did I get that right, John?
Yep.
Okay. And Carol Kissel, the CFO, as well as myself, Carl, and Lorraine. And so we had the meeting, and it was, I think, productive. You never really know, but there were 3 points that I wanted to convey, those that were present, and those points were that we wanted to convey. Is that we said up front, the RAC wants to work from our staff to respond to issues raised by the board and riders in a timely manner. Our second point, the RAC appreciates the amount of staff considering how staff invests in feedback from us and starting an initiative, not at the last minute when an initiative is ready to be presented to the board. Some of you all that have served on the RAC in the past may understand that at times the amount of staff tends to come to us at the last minute. So what we want to focus on is making sure that we're going to grade back at the beginning and as the model moves along on these certain important initiatives. The third point that we wanted to convey and get across was that the RAC wants acknowledgement from WMATA staff to the board about the suggestions we put forward. And tell us why or not those suggestions were adopted or were not adopted. A lot of times we all we give suggestions here, we do things at working group meetings, we submit resolutions. And I think there's been this common agreement amongst ourselves that maybe we aren't fully acknowledged. And so we're not expecting WMATA to take on everything or to knock down everything and disagree. But I think the RAC leadership team thought it was important that WMATA staff say, hey, we really want to hear back from you all and what you think about these ideas and why they were implemented and why they weren't. The next thing that we talked about at the meeting were some of the issues that we were working on, such as Joseph working on the youth issue, then working on airport accessibility. But probably the most meaningful part of this discussion was that the general manager gave us 4 suggestions for what he would like to see the RAC work on. Those 4 things are, 1, customer behavior, so etiquette, eating, listening to music on the on the train, maybe disturbing someone else's already life that they focus on from work. The second issue that the general manager would like to see us work on is to get improved feedback from low-income, computer illiterate, and/or limited English proficient writers. The third issue is to somehow figure out how to encourage people to enter or exit the system quickly. The fourth issue the general manager mentioned was lowering the price of the Smarter card and perhaps bringing in Carol Kissel to talk to us about how to manage revenue when Metro does this. So what I'd like to hear from you all and the other members of the leadership team is, of those four initiatives, because we still need to present that to the board, kind of get their approval, let them know this is what the general manager has mentioned to us. Are you okay with us moving forward on two of these four in this manner? I'd like to get your general feedback on any one of those four strikes you particularly hard as to what the RAC is about and what we should be doing. So Don went up first, Don, Frank, and then.
I personally would love to work on the issue of how to get people in and out of the system.
Thank you.
Frank? And first, I want to say thank you for having met with them and for, I think, particularly that point of getting feedback back from them about what things were or were not expected. It is a real coup. For our dignity as an organization.
Frank, before I forget, let me also say first, some of you all may not know, to my knowledge, this is the first time that the RAC leadership team has taken the initiative to meet with the GM at the beginning of the session so that we can be seen as working in a collaborative spirit and a collaborative manner. And that was very apparent on the general manager's face as he was speaking to us that, wow, they're really trying to work with us and not necessarily against us.
I thought points one and three were not in our behavior. We're not responsible for customer behavior, and we aren't responsible for getting people on our board system. We're not responsible for policing the customers. We're policing the riders.
And the other one was encouraging the people to enter and exit the system quickly?
I think that's something we'll have to work on, but I don't think it's necessarily something that is our responsibility.
Okay, and I'm going to ask Don. Do you want to respond to that? Because he just supported it.
I think we have to be involved in making some something we work on. For example, you know, you talked about in the bit of the budget increasing the difference between Smart Chip and Safety Care Program. And I think that it's important to get by the input. And then when we look at issues like lowering the price of Smart Trip, then, you know, the easiest way to do that is that you can't go anywhere. They need to lower the price of Smart Trip. But it's going to give the unions a lot of drive. So I do think it's integral to the rider experience. There's only limited ways you can do it. So this is not like a large analytical exercise that only Metro staff can do. I think it's something that riders can have input on, and I'm happy that they're asking us instead of determining what they're going to do and then tell us.
Okay. Frank, then I got on and
I think it would be particularly interesting for us to look at the Smart Trip issue. I think there's a lot of feedback that we can offer there, maybe some outside the box thinking. I think the getting on and off the system, I think we actually have something to say there. I mean, on the bus, for example, a simple exit sign on the back door and an entrance sign on the front door seems like it would make a big difference. I think there are a lot of other little sort of common sense things we would probably say. Maybe it's not worth a whole session, but.
So is this the lowering of the price of the car or getting people to enter and exit the system?
Both.
Oh, both.
I think we can have a good impact on both of those.
Okay, great. Ron?
Yeah, I guess I interpreted it, and you can tell me whether I interpreted it wrong. The suggestion about moving people in and out efficiently, I assume that was closely connected with safety. And one of my concerns, and I think that I've voiced over the last couple of years, is whenever there's a problem in the system, people just seem to jam up. And so I took that as meaning the greater idea of safety, which I think we do have a concern and a viewpoint on. So I would like very much to see that one get get a lot of attention.
Can I just interject? The getting on and off, specifically the general manager was referring to entering and exiting the bus.
The bus.
Okay.
That's the clarification needed. I assume it included the metro, so.
It did not include the rail system, at least in the discussion on Friday.
I guess I would like to suggest that the RAC suggest that it include the metro system on it as well.
Let me pause for a minute here, and I apologize. I did not ask the others that were present if they could add to your comments. I just assumed everyone could do my recap. Carl and Lorraine and John.
I'm Leary. I didn't get a feedback that can be provided, but I'm Leary about us dictating customer behavior. Like others, that's not necessarily our job. A year and a half ago, when the chief of police was here, and I asked him how many. I have to go back to the meeting, but I asked how many times our officers would write out written tickets for food during those sorts of violations that you see on the signs that are posted at the station entrances. He indicated it was a very rare event. So it seems to me that the authority is not using the tools they have already, or has chosen to work fully with everyone else on some of those issues. Am I saying that they should be taking every 6-year-old from candy bar? Probably. But I do think that needs to be explored more fully. And I don't know that we are the body that should be fully involved in deciding how the police customer behavior. That said, I do think though that on this entry and exit, plus there is some very good input that we can provide.
One other thing in response to that, a couple of other comments that the general manager made is that when it comes to customer behavior, we wanted us to look at possibly creative solutions, researching the agency, looking at other trans agencies to see what they've done. So let me go with you. That's Carol. Carol, you posted an impact.
I definitely think that we should, and as part of our role, look at things like the improved feedback from populations that aren't necessarily on social media, et cetera, et cetera. And certainly, I think coming up with a strategy for reducing the smart trip fare, reducing revenue, are things that seem worthy of taking on. Items 1 and 3 almost work on the offensive to me. Because it's like blaming the customer, and it's like what you gentlemen talked about at the beginning. It's almost like it shows a complete lack of respect and regard for the customer. So what I would propose is that perhaps we have a counter proposal that says we would like to take on improving the customer experience. And under that rubric, we could talk about things like how to get people to enter an exit system more quickly, because it's dragged to the, it does improve the customer experience both for the slow person as well as the person who's being held up by a person who is having difficulty. But I certainly would not want to see a rack associated with anything that sort of smacks of awful people that could just get you to act right while we're collecting more and more of our money. That's how it describes me.
I think that Harold put it a lot better than I was going to say. I think everyone in the meeting was in town, especially since we have been able to buy that. I follow 6 miles on Twitter, and there's not a picture of at least 9 Metro employees eating, drinking, or whatever on Metro. And so I think that there's nowhere near around. I think that even the idea of customer behavior, to me, is just. I don't think she won't hate it. I think that number 2 and number 4, as far as engaging community of poverty and lack of accessibility to technology, I think the word illiterate, poor does not mean that they're illiterate. That means that it's a lot of their issue that they don't have access. They don't have access to it. Right. So the aging board and not being aware of literate technology means that they may have accessibility problems with technology. And so I think that that's something that I think that I love and I hope other people love to work on. And that before, I just think that Metro should be clear that the purpose of this smart trip and the reason why it costs so much, there has been enhancement. It is not about getting people to move to smart trip. And so helping them realize that, I guess, and saying we can bring this price down, I think that that's something that we should definitely work on. Mulu is about number 3 still. I have some concerns about it. I think if they want to ask us our consideration, our ideas about how to encourage other people to use the bathroom or the bus, that's great. I'm still believing about number 3, but 2 and 4 I definitely like.
That's what they want.
Candace, Victoria, and then John. Or John,
would you
like
to work? I just wanted to chime in. Not that it sounds like you all are interested anyway. It's not necessarily policing customer behavior, but it's as customers, are there ways that Metro, you know, can reach out to people to make them, I guess, more aware of the rules and more aware of the expectations of what's involved with riding the system. I don't think it's meant to be punitive. You know, if I, as an example, and then I'll move on, you know, if I were to get on the train tomorrow, how would I know you're not allowed to eat or drink? Would it be one of those signs that's about yay high that says no eating or drinking? No, you know, nobody's going to see that. Are there better ways to communicate that? I think that's the, that's what the general manager was getting at. And lastly, the smart trip card issue was not prices, just to be, make sure that I'm very clear, it was not the price of fares on the smart trip card, it was the cost of the card itself.
Oh.
Currently, Metro charges you $5 for a card.
No, no, I understand.
I think some people didn't. Right. And so I just wanted to be clear that they're looking at reducing the cash cost of the card that you have to pay, or that you have to pay to get a smart trip card. And how do you do that? You know, the RAC a couple years ago talked about how you do that and still allow a negative balance to exit the rail system and all those really kind of quirky issues because of our really quirky fare system. I think that is the issue that the CFO was looking for input on. So.
I'm actually going to pass Candace and Victoria, so we've got about 5 minutes left. Okay. Candace, Victoria, and then John.
Access for All has already done a lot of the work working with populations who don't speak English and are on the disadvantaged level. So I would say one of the things that would be good for this group to do would be to invite members of that group to come here and look at the proposals they've already done. They've already done the research, they've got proposals with respect to, even with respect to fare cards and fare media. I know AEC, because of the work that they have done, put proposals forward that talk about using cash and using paper fare cards and using them as opposed to smart cards, and how there was a surcharge put on both cash and fare cards, which is what most of the individuals who are low income or can't speak English as a first language use. That's a disincentive. They have statistics, they have numbers, they have metrics, they have solutions, recommendations. So rather than reinvent what they've already done, I think that the first thing we should do is invite them to come here and to listen to what they have to say and see if we either want to sign on or modify recommendations or put forward.
Okay, that sounds great. And we can definitely look into doing that. But I want to be clear, though, that I'm just really trying to get a feel for what the RAC feels more strongly about. We still have to meet with the board and see what they're doing, what they are. And that's a good option for us.
I know that a lot of people don't like the issue of etiquette, but I know, for example, when I'm on the bus, etiquette can be a huge issue, especially for the bus driver. And so it's something that I feel needs to be looked at. For example, if something is spilled on the bus, it causes a safety issue, people getting on and off the bus. Or if music is too loud, people on the bus cannot hear announcements. So I think that that is important. It may seem like it's sort of telling people how to behave, but I think no matter what, when you're in a public forum, you should have some type of etiquette so that what you're doing doesn't affect people in a negative way. And so I do think that that is important, because I've seen people spill stuff on the bus, and it's just left there because there's no time to clean it up. There's no one to clean it up, or they don't have napkins or something else to clean it up. So you have to worry about maybe myself not paying attention, getting up and potentially slipping, and then that causes legal issues, that causes the bus guy to sit at a bus stop. So I think etiquette is an important issue, and it needs to be addressed, because I don't think people know. For example, when I first moved here, I didn't know that I couldn't have my cup of coffee in the morning as I was getting on the metro. So the signs aren't really visible, and if you're not, if you don't live in this area, you don't know. And then I would say the issue of getting in and out of the bus quicker, I think it's difficult depending on what bus you're on, because you're not always going to be able to exit via the back door. For example, if I'm on the 14th Street bus at 9 o'clock in the morning or 8:30, it's so packed sometimes that the only way I can go is out the front, or because I can't get to the back of the door. So I think that's going to be a difficult issue to sort of talk about for certain bus lines, because you can't always navigate people towards the back of the bus to get off. And I do think that, for example, I know that my parents, when they come to the city, they have no idea how to basically ride the bus or put money on their smart trip card or things like that. So I think that maybe that's maybe my, what I would think people need help with, is maybe improve feedback for people who are computer illiterate. For example, I don't know if my mom would be able to do a lot of the things associated with Metro. So.
Victoria, and I think that's about it. I like your point about smart trip cards and possibly reducing the cost for them. And with that, I would also like Vermont to advertise more about where people can buy smart trip cards. I thought it was pretty clear that you can buy them at CVS and Giant, but I hear constantly that people don't know where to buy them if they never go to a rail station. So I would definitely think to advertise that more. And to advertise more, we did have free cards available for low income people. I think they went through different social groups and possibly across the town where there wasn't a CVS or Giant to have other partners where they were selling cards. And one other point, I like what Joseph said about lack of access to technology, and that just got me thinking about places where we can also buy people, meet people. Who do lack of access to technology, and I was thinking of libraries. That would be a great place to advertise for Metro, have some information there, some paper and maps, some different things.
Thanks. Frank?
First of all, I'm saying my grandmother may not have been as witty as Joseph's. Well, my purpose of advice was always to assume the intentions on the part of your interlocutors, and John's comment made me realize that it may have seemed like a lot of us were assuming ill intentions from the general manager, and I don't think that that's true. My objections to 1 and 3 had less to do with what the intention might have been, as much as that when I speak with riders and my riding experience, and you know, with all due respect to Candace, I agree that I'll come back to that. I don't think customer behavior and getting on and off the system are the top priorities of any riders. I think that getting information and getting feedback from all riders and lowering and getting more people using SmartTrip by lowering the cost are priorities that a lot of people, at least the people that I know, have. So to me, it's a matter. I don't contradict what Candace said, but to me it's a matter of priorities, and we're all going to put our priorities.
So thank you all for your comments. The next step is for the leadership team to meet with the board chair and get the board to take on which of these initiatives they would like for us to take on, and we'll definitely voice what we just heard in this room and get back to you all. And I also would like to welcome the staff.
staff meeting where we do our working groups and then we do reports and we email our reports and things like that. And so, and so with that, you know, being said, understanding that those people who are passionate about that issue and they want to work on that issue outside of this one monthly meeting, those are the ones that we should work on. That you're that passionate about it, that you are interested in working on it, not in just this meeting.
So we, I just want everyone to know, I'm sick of the time, we're running about 15 minutes late, so I just want to let people know, when they go about 15 minutes late, if you have to leave, I understand, if you can stay with us, I encourage you to do so, because we've got a great discussion coming up about communication. But before we get there, very briefly, Joseph, and then, if you want to give us your group updates on the...
I can do this in 1 minute. So I'm leading the working group on the idea that healthy, the idea of floating around that healthy brought to the council about forming, possibility of forming a new council, a youth advisory council for Metro. And one of the things that we talked about last month before was engaging youth leaders throughout the region and having them decide what kind of representation they want. Opposed to us saying, we create a new council and then you guys deal on it and do it. And so I will tell you that I have already spoken to and will be having meetings with the youth mayor in D.C. and the mayor of D.C. Leadership Institute in D.C., the Prince George's County Regional Association of Student Councils, plus the Prince George's County Advisory Commission, the Montgomery County student, newly elected student board member, and their Montgomery County student advisory regional association of student government. I have not had such success in Virginia. And so those people who live and work in Virginia, your advice on who best to reach out to in Virginia, I would very much appreciate it.
And I also want to remind you to believe that some point bring in more of that.
Oh yes, and we're going to bring in some more of that people too.
Thanks, I'll speak as briefly as I can. I think we had our first meeting of the airport accessibility group a couple weeks ago now. With Jim Emmerich, actually, was here earlier. I have to say, it was a fascinating meeting. I think, I learned a ton. Everything that I thought I knew about airport transportation was blown out of the water by this presentation. Just hearing what he had to say about all of the difficulties that Mulata faces, that the jurisdictions face, and how both the 5A and the B30 are such platypus services within the system. It was very interesting, and I'm really looking forward to our next meeting, which is going to be with the Metropolitan Washington and the Airports Authority. And John's been working to set that up. I know there's some scheduling issues. We would like to do that earlier, but people have been away, and the schedules haven't matched. We're still trying to figure out who various points of contact are. But once that is set up, I'd encourage anybody who's interested to come along and do that. And as a result of the first meeting, I wrote up, I think it's like 10 pages or something like that of just information that was given out at that meeting. I would say 90% of it was new to me. So I think we're coming up on something quite interesting here. So I'd encourage other people to participate if you're interested.
Thank you.
Can you share the notes,
did
you?
I shared with people who were there just to sort of make sure that I had everything right. I think I was looking to maybe have it more consolidated and more polished before I sent it out to the rest of the group up here, so that I'd be really happy.
Okay.
it's a work in progress right now, so I want it to be a nice little polished But again, if you're interested, I'm really happy to share it.
Yeah, and I think we're just getting out about that meeting and the work that's happening because I was actually contacted in that 4 weeks within DIAC program manager from Florida contacted us saying that he was very glad that we were looking at this issue. So we're trying to put him to going forward. The next agenda item that we have is communication and regular communication, so I'm actually going to turn this over to Carl.
Over the last month, everyone has been weighing in over email on specific recommendations on how the authority should communicate better on a regular basis. This is not a reflection of the struggles that the agency continues to face whenever crisis or emergency or non-anticipated events occur. But we compiled a list of things that I think is a consensus of the group.
we talked about in a meeting with GM / CEO on Friday was that there's a deficit of trust, and people want to hear from their authority if it's good news or it's bad news. So we compiled these recommendations. I'm hoping to go ahead and move without them and transfer them to the board and GM as official recommendations. So that motion's on the table. Open for discussion. Are there any amendments on the agreement to monitor communications counts included in the packets?
Don't have an amendment, but I have a comment. Okay. So my comment is, when you have a general manager, I can very much sense that he is he's associated, he tries to deal with the larger problems. And so I think anytime we have, I think this resolution is great. I think this is a priority, and I think this is specifically the type of thing that we need to provide to the board on a regular basis and then follow up to see what they can do and what they can't do. But I also think we need to include with this some letter that talks about maybe what the other top five trans agencies across the nation are doing, to let Vermont know, you know, we're not alone in asking for this information. In Portland they do this, in San Francisco they do this, in New York they do this communication-wise. So I guess what I'm saying is, in the letter, I don't have any recommendations for this actual proposal, but in the letter I think we need to expand whatever communication efforts are going on across the nation, and that this isn't just unique to the DC area being asked to communicate on a regular basis.
I want to say also about this, because I don't have anything about this, but in general, but at the board meeting last week on Thursday, we had that was there for about 2 hours, very long, a lot of testimony. I think I was not able to take that time for work at the end of the meeting. But I can tell you that, because what I expect to get from this is that there may be some concern about the feasibility of doing these kind of things. I wanted to share that. At the meeting, there was the AAC and some of their advocates were asking Metro to do a lot of other things, and there was the pushback of the feasibility of whether or not that is possible technology-wise and everything like that. And I think that's one of the best things that I've heard with board member Tom Dan and Muriel Alger, and I forget the lady's name, but not the chair, but the other lady from Northern Virginia. They all very, very mild. They all said the same thing. A lot of times when people are asking for ways to improve Metro, the staff pushes back that that's not feasible to do. And Tom Dane down said he's tired of hearing about the not feasibility of it. Figure out how to do it, how much it costs, and then we will talk about whether or not it's a big enough priority item after we figure out how much it costs. So I think that we can expect some of that from here, but we should continue to push forward with how much it will cost, how tough will it be, and then we will see after we know all of that information, if this is really important for us, after we know all of that. Because I feel like that's a lot of times, especially something like this, managing two Twitter accounts versus one, that may be some of the pushback that we get.
So I just
want
to make sure, you want to make sure it's kind of a moving document that perhaps we still hold on and adopt it tonight and put it forward to the board in the official letter, but then once we get again the board's feedback, and if they say, well, we particularly like the Vermont monthly newsletter, then we work with staff to see how to make that newsletter happen. Is that?
And if people say, oh, well, we can't do that, ask them why, and to show us why we can't do that.
Well, can I just jump in? I don't think that there's any reason every single one of these items isn't attainable, and I don't think that we should hold a priority to anything less than that. I don't think it's that groundbreaking to send a newsletter. I don't think it's that groundbreaking to send a CEO report. I agree with Kelsey that I think we could pair this with a letter that cites or the citation page or something, cites other authorities that are doing all these things, so there's no excuse. I think it is a moving document, and I see no reason why we wouldn't send the same letter to the board every month until every single one of these items is accomplished.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm in favor of sending
the
letter. I mean, we had a good opportunity to comment there every month, and, you know, let's face it, that we have a lot of staff, so they're not unable to pour through documents and find out where these other things are happening. The only concession I might make is I might put an appendix or an attachment that just lists some of the things that you listed in your email, and I would leave the letter alone, and I would send it.
Great. All about this.
I just want to say that this is the beginning of my 12th year on the council, and all of the past 3 years, we've talked about improving communications, and this is the first concrete, comprehensive proposal that I've seen. So, please take it as a sign.
It's only great because you contributed back.
I do not.
I'll accept this friendly amendment adding appendix that includes citations of other authorities, unless there are any other amendments for discussion.
Could you move to accept this?
Yeah, I move. Hearing no other debate, all in favor of adopting these recommendations, I move the board and the all opposed?
Okay.
Any objections? What are you going to pass this?
Okay.
We'll compile the appendix and have a final version around to people end of the week, beginning next week.
Exactly. One thing is that the board may have received a plan to change the process. See how fast we can work on that, so these things actually done in the manner that is.
Yes. Did you mention communication when you talked, when you spoke with the gym?
Yes, we did mention communication, and we actually had a rough version of this proposal here. And I think there was a recognition that communication, better communication, could be useful. I think there was also a few statements that were more pushback as to how feasible is this for us to do? There were times throughout the discussion where I had to hear the general manager, but then also hear what I know I heard from the writers and what I think would be a great thing from the writers. And there was also a time, I think, during the meeting where I probably got a little bit more vocal and said, adopting a such as a monthly newsletter would actually improve the transit literacy of a lot of the customers. And so when bus bunching happens, when track maintenance happens, they're not just hearing from a lot about how their bus isn't going to show up or their train isn't going to show up, but they know ahead of time why these things are happening, who MOD is working with, and it's giving them a vision as to where MOD is trying to go. Anyone else in the room want to weigh in on how this proposal is received?
Can I just say in this letter that the cover letter that the benefits to MOD and the board should be highlighted as well? They don't have a little
Yes, one strategy would be turn his words around on him. In fact, incorporate these four things and use the little letters. Even the kinds of things that we're proposing here that definitely go toward improving, work that in if you can. Okay, you know what I mean?
So we're going to quickly move on to the next communication item, and Carl, that's going to be your hand. But this is communication for emergency situations, not general no-pass situations.
As I mentioned, we talked about investor trust with the GM on Friday. There have been a variety of high-profile incidents that have raised serious questions about the authority's ability to handle crisis communication. In the last month since we met, paging through my four-page article stack, a gentleman passed away after a heart attack at the bus station when a defibrillator letter was not charged. There was an op-ed in the Washington Post about a gentleman who was attacked and then did not have what seems to be an appropriate response from Metro Transit Police. For a period to indicate that there is any sort of coordination occurring between the Transit Police and MPD. There was the thief who stole the iPad. As an iPad owner myself, I sympathize, though no violence should form that should be acceptable on Metro. And that was the same No, no, this guy wrote it. So, and then there's the derailment, which is probably the largest thing. It was called a minor derailment by WMATA in their initial press reports. I think a lot of people would question the word minor. Any sort of derailment that causes threat to life and the limb should probably be considered more seriously. So, in light of all these things, the leadership team has discussed a variety of proposals. I've circulated things to folks on email. And I think we would, if there's interest, I think there should be, I think we're going to propose holding a hearing in the next month on safety, security, and emergency preparedness within WMATA and asking MPD, inviting MPD, Metro Transit Police, and other related jurisdictions discuss some of the publicized failures, some of the perhaps unpublicized successes, if there were any, and really focus on what's happening, looking forward to ensure that these sorts of things don't happen. I mean, everyone agrees that a 15-minute response time, which is what I think the gentleman who was attacked waited for the police because Metro Transit Police was too far away. I think most of us would agree that's not acceptable data point, especially when MPD appears to be in your car. So I guess I'd just go ahead and open the floor to discussion, and at the end of the discussion, I'll likely make a motion to get something set up in the next month so that we can get some answers and figure out how they're going to move forward and make sure the board moves in this direction.
So as Paul mentioned, some of us have been discussing this for some time. And what I had some reservations at first because I know that there can be occasions where you have meetings set for one intent and it turns into another thing. What I personally don't want this to be is a finger-pointing situation. I'd like for the graphics involved for it to be more of that first fact-finding session where we bring in the appropriate people, ask what is the normal protocol, what low-hanging fruit are they already aware of that they need to assist, what additional resources do they need, and then looking forward, what can we all do? Not just what can Metro Transit Police do, what can Metropolitan Police do, but what can we as drivers do to ensure that the environment is more safe and that emergency response communications happen more rapidly. The other thought that I have, and I wanted to put this out there, is that if we have a special meeting, we're both to have a special meeting, a topic like this can be very sensitive and it's also very critical. So I think this is an excellent opportunity if the board is willing for us to actually partner with a committee. And it doesn't have to be an entire board, but maybe one or two members, invite them here to have this type of session or a special meeting with us. And I think what it might do is that it might give more, add more seriousness to the situation and what the RAC is looking for, and guarantee that not only do WMATA staff show up, but they fully understand the weight of the situation and what we're looking for and how we're trying to communicate
things. And in the proposal that I circulated, you know, we had both time for our invited guests to give testimony and provide feedback on what they're doing and what they're going to be doing better, but there is also a public component with taking public questions during the time meeting as well as analysts or witnesses, however you choose to call them. Just a quick comment. I think when we talk about this issue, it tends to get very emotional. People have a very sort of visceral reaction, but I think it would benefit us and the public and WMATA also if we look at it as soberly as possible and as much on data as possible. And I think I'd be interested in hearing from WMATA staff who work on the dashboard, the things, the people that were here a couple months ago to talk about, you know, what are the thresholds that we can put together to try and get a sense of what we define as success when it comes to emergencies. I mean, the best success is to not have an emergency at all, but in terms of emergency response, there can be metrics there that we can look at, and I would just encourage us to maybe think about in terms of who we invite to that meeting, have someone who can speak to them.
And that's something that I think the GM indicated is when we met him on some other issues, he's certainly someone who's had a group enough that we
pose questions to the folks in advance so that, you know, there is some answer, so it's not a, well, we're going to get back to you 2 weeks down the road and there is no view. I like the idea of the number of the board. I like the idea because I think that will be awfully needed access information. Like, yeah, I wouldn't want to know the story. And I remember last year, Victoria and I talked about public safety with the police chief. And I asked him, well, and nobody would be more official than us as a customer. They had 3-digit emergency number that they can call in the emergency cabin, as opposed to dialing 911, being passed through someone else, and then someone else. And he said, well, it's too complicated to do. And so I asked, how long does it take for that to happen? And they said that would be too difficult. That information is too difficult for each of you. And so we need that information in order to talk about this realistically. And I think that's a board member, who will then more likely provide that information. The other board member, so that's where I am with that one. I think it's a good idea, but I'm a little hesitant about this becoming I'm a little hesitant about the board's involvement in what in the minor advocacy, because they may not see this the way we see it, and it can be, and then that can lead to a big explosion if they don't. And so I think that we just have to be careful about that. But what I wanted to ask Carl is if earlier in the email communication we proposed how we want this to be forward moving, right? What type of things we may ask in order to make sure this is more moving. Do you think it would be beneficial to send that to Metro and ask him to provide information to help us before he's doing understand these things and we ask questions about it?
Absolutely. I mean, I just like any, you know, but yes, sure.
And let me say that while the rep wants to move quickly, this isn't a topic that I think should be rushed. So this isn't, if we're presenting it tonight, I don't think any of us expected to vote on it tonight unless we could tell everyone that a certain presents a certain way strongly. Also, we were contacted by a member of the public, John, I think a couple of weeks ago, regarding the incident with the defibrillator.
Mm-hmm.
And I think whether or not we decided to have a special meeting, I think it would behoove us to have that individual come and speak for maybe 10 or 15 minutes, since he was right in the middle of things, and I understand he's an emergency response official himself, and he kind of gives us his first-hand account as to what's going on. So that's another option we have. And as we decide, this is something that we should pursue over time.
I just want to mention that I give too more background information. I think it would be helpful if we did have the MPD does have some procedures right now, so we're communicating according to jurisdiction, so it would be helpful to that beforehand instead of just kind of walking into the meeting with no background. And that might also help drive discussion too if we see some holes in their procedures. We can come up some ideas.
I agree. I agree. I'm going to go ahead and put a motion on the table to plan a hearing for the end of the month, and within the next month, on this topic, with more details to be ironed out on email, and in the spirit of
what's going to happen by the end of the month? The actual meeting or the planning meeting for the
meeting? My motion is to have an actual meeting before the end of the month. We can start immediately with figuring out who we want to invite and what questions we need answers of people on the moment.
Hopeful thinking that you have so many parties to coordinate.
Well, I think that there's a, well, I agree. You think that there is a component that's a, of course.
I just want to say that the
email communication that occurred to develop recommendations for regular communication worked really well, because all of us have busy schedules and don't have really the necessary phone or working rooms. That for me at least, it's the best way to work out these kind of one-on versus things like airport bus service between apartment and that.
I think the other thing we can do is that while we can have a proposal of aiming to have the meeting by the end of the month, certainly if the board moves in, we've got additional information they want to consider, I don't think we're saying we're not flexible. I think maybe what the vote is that we want to have a meeting on this issue, not necessarily a conference, or a separate.
I think that we can figure something out that is timely and provide the appropriate time to get the required background information. And I don't think we would have it. You know, if it takes 6 weeks to find the time when we can get a couple different parties in the room, which shouldn't, on an issue like this, because of the seriousness and gravity of it, then we'll have to wait 6 weeks. But I think the goal would be to have sooner than later, just in light of the seriousness.
Right.
I agree with the sooner than later, and I agree with having a deadline or a goal to reach for. But I think if we want to have the public attend this in any way, we have to give them more time before. I can't imagine that it will be planned, that it would take at least 2 weeks to get the plan in place. And I only have 2 weeks of publicity, I think it's not a good strategy.
There's a holiday at the end of the month. I think I'm definitely sensitive to that. And, you know, if it's the end of May before we get a plan, then I'm still pushing back.
Yeah, I think the vote is, I think we
can
go on. We have, whether or not to have a meeting, the intention of having
it as soon as possible. Practically. And then we can see, because we want, as we all want to do this right, and I don't think we should say, oh, it's because the money's not having it.
We want to be productive.
Sure. Can I just have a quick question? Is the purpose of the meeting, would that be more of a fact-finding meeting, or is it to sort of say, based on these stories, this is what we think should happen, and this is how we should go about things in the future?
I think there's a fact-finding component prior to that we should start immediately. I also think that there's a component to this that, you know, we're going to want. I think there is a lot of value in getting parties in the same room saying something in public together, because there's a record of it and it happens, and we can emphasize the fact that we need to be better. Sure that there have been reviews in the press has reported them of the defibrillator, and then I'm sure there's a review going on the derailment and that sort of thing. So, you know, they are, you know, all right with it already moving forward on some sort of review on the responses, and I think that we would expect them to come to the table not only to share that, but to share how they are moving forward.
So part of what we know and what do I know, what does NTPC know, what do they know that perhaps they could do better, but then also what can they hear from the public that might make it easier for them to do their job that they aren't even aware of, and that the public will need to be aware of what channels already exist, what hasn't been explored, because I'm just oblivious, I don't know that that's what I'm supposed to do in an emergency. Victoria, and then I think we're done with
so does this proposal mean that Carl is taking the lead on the fact finding?
I'm happy to play coordinated.
And also, this may be an opportunity for us to have a hearing at a location other than the lot too. I know we mentioned that in the past.
Okay.
Great, hearing another discussion, all in favor of moving forward, planning the public safety emergency response here as soon as practically possible. Say aye. All opposed? Abstentions? Measure passed unanimously.
Okay, and so we have a few more items left on the agenda. Next is questions slash comments on the back chair and AAC chair report. Pat, you want to go first? Continue to be a brief spot.
Right.
I know a lot happened.
I think it's fairly evident in what the report says, you know, that we had quite an extensive meeting, let's say about a board meeting, had to deal with mental access. We had about 40 people there, about 30 of them testified. I guess the bottom line is that the fares for the bus and rail were raised. I think Pete that element is not going to be a good budget. What was interesting is that group had asked that the mental access piece, based on the testimony that was evident and proposed at the meeting, be removed from the formula, and that was not done. However, the board did go into, I believe, another meeting afterwards, executive session. So my group is waiting to see what that executive session, what they came up with respect to the mental access fares.
Pat, just to clarify, the executive session, they couldn't, the only things they were discussing were what was on the agenda, and it was actually supposed to be held before the board meeting.
Okay.
So they couldn't add stuff to the agenda to talk about the recap from the board meeting. I think there was going to be a follow-up.
Right. Was there a follow-up meeting now?
Not yet. I mean, they haven't met again since last Thursday.
So after the board meeting, was there a follow-up meeting?
No, there was an executive session.
Right.
It was supposed to be prior, but in order to have the board meeting start on time, since there were so many people there wanting to testify, mm-hmm. they moved the executive session after. What they are unable to do, however, is add things to the advertised agenda for the executive session. So while I was certainly not in the executive session, I do not believe that was part of the discussion.
Okay, that's good to know, John. Thank you for that. And so, as far as then the mental access discussion, I guess we wait to see where that falls out as far as the board's concerned and what they decided with respect to the testimony. I think it was very effective. Whether we, as AAC, got the results that we wished for, we're going to have to wait and see. I think we'll hear something from the National Board. Is there anything you can add to that, John?
If I remember correctly from their discussion, it was that they wanted to talk about it, presumably at the upcoming Finance Committee meeting in the context of the budget, which will be next week. So the agenda and materials for that are put out on Monday, so I will let you all know if that's on the agenda. And I'm sure the ADAP staff will also.
So just a clarification, John. You're saying that even though they took a vote with respect to the budget, that the piece on the metro access would still come up?
No, they were very clear. They took a vote with respect to fares.
The fares, right.
The board still has to adopt the final budget. Mm-hmm. And I forget, I think it might have been Mr. Downs, or maybe it was Mr. Nichols, that said something along the lines of, you know, someone said, I don't know if it was staff or whoever said something about, well, there are revenue impacts and blah, blah, blah. And basically the answer was, well, right, but we still have to decide on the budget. And presumably, you know, money is fungible. And so if the board decides to make any adjustments to the Metro Access budget in the larger context of Metro's overall FY 2013 budget, now, you know, this month as part of the budget adoption is when they'll do it.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It does make sense, John. It seems like it's still up in the air. The difficulty, just for Brad to understand, is also that when you work on bus and rail, metro access is usually twice the amount of bus and rail. So if you're raising the fares of bus and rail, what are you going to do with metro access? And I guess that piece is still up in the air.
We we've got about 5 minutes left.
That's it.
Okay, thank you. So just a few deliveries and I'll support the board.
Had anyone just informed them of our deliberations? If you remember our council meeting last month, the finance committee met and adjusted the budget because of some found money. I was concerned about found money. After they presented their budget. So that's pretty much what I talked about. There was not much comment to me afterwards because there were so many other people there. I do want to say, though, I went there and the room was full of Metro Access customers. I would hope that as this issue about Metro Access is continued to be deliberated by the board, that this group would be more involved and interested and supportive of what the AAC does. If you want to talk about people who pay a lot of money for very crappy service, we pay a lot for crappy service, but they pay a lot for service that sometimes doesn't come at all, and leave them out places where they have no ability otherwise to get somewhere. And I think that a part of our charter that Patrick spoke about is Metro Access, and I hope that we will keep an eye on this. I've asked John to keep us in the loop on this, and we will be very supportive of making sure that whatever increase that they do possibly get, that is something that is manageable or maintained for the people who are most at need for the service.
Thanks. Let's quickly have a comment from Carl regarding the emergency response meeting.
Since the planning of this is going to have to be online, it would please be as responsive as possible. I think the communication resolution that I heard from almost everyone over email, pulling together something of this scale is going to be complex, and I'm sure John is too many prospects. Might be right on to his desk. But we really need to, it's very helpful when everyone is engaged on email and planning or something like this, because the next time we discuss this, hopefully we have the your input, whether by phone to me or Kelsey or any other leadership team, John, or email, is going to be needed. So thank you in advance for staying very dialed in.
I know our email people also probably have a discussion about me trying to provide Google groups that they have kind of been in the National Historic Valley, so we might find doing some practical Google groups might be good for the practice planning. We're now on to open writing community meetings. I do have a couple announcements. One is I did attend the Greenwood Access Improvement meeting last week. I actually heard about it the day before, and I heard about it from the staff of a lot of board members, and hear about it from a lot of, which upset me and disappointed me because I live in Ward 7 and I'm not hearing about this meeting through WMATA. But moving forward, I think we now have a place and we're working with John and other WMATA staff, where WMATA staff will try their best to notify RAC members in those jurisdictions about these meetings going on, so that we can be present. We can not only talk to WMATA and whatever state agency, but also talk to our fellow writers that are out there. The other two things I wanted to mention when it comes to community meetings or open mic, please be certain to spread the, or to distribute the flyers that John is going to provide us with each month to your network. Let other people know that we've got this meeting here. We want the public to attend. We also want the public to attend some of our more specialized assignments, the working group assignments. And also, sometime this month, you will be receiving sort of a data dump from John. It'll be like a news clip email or where he will give us all information about how the RAC may be in for WMATA have been mentioned in the press, newspaper, blogs, tweets, so that we can stay informed about not only what is going on with WMATA, but what's being said about the RAC and are we really in tune with the needs of our clients, which are clients, and being close to them.
I have a handout from Action Committee, announcement from the Action Committee for Transit, which I'm a member. The May, June, and July meetings have been set for they occur on the second Tuesday of the month. Interesting meetings are coming. Thank you.
Yeah.
The meetings take place in Silver Spring, a pleasant walk from the Silver Spring Metro rail station at 7:30 in the evening, the second Tuesday of the month.
Thank you.
Joseph?
I'm going to vote very quickly here. John, I think we have mentioned this before, and I want to know if we have been doing it, where we have the speaker sign in or even the guest sign in from over there. Do we ask people for their email address?
We do, but we don't require them to provide it.
No, I don't think we require them to provide it. For the email that we do collect, is it possible that for us, when we get this, when we solidify our agenda, when we get Friday, that those people who are going to attend our meeting,
sure,
that they also get that, that we possibly can get that?
You bet.
As well, you can do that?
Yes.